Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. I have a special Sitting in the Park show today. I just played as a Christmas song, Jan Bradley's It's Christmas Time, and I have very special guest in the studio right now, Jan Bradley, who will be talking about her music and will be playing her records. So it should definitely be a good show. You should keep tuned. So first of all, thanks so much for coming down to the studio.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Okay, well, I hope everybody had a good holiday, and I hope you had a good holiday, too.
Oh, I had a wonderful holiday.
So, first of all, can we start off, I always ask everybody where you're originally from.
Well, originally, you want to know where I was born?
Sure.
I was born in Byhalia, Mississippi, and my parents migrated here from there when I was about 5 years old.
Okay.
And so we lived in a town called Robbins, Illinois.
And you lived there since when you were 5 years old, moved to Robbins.
Right. We moved to Robbins and lived there for, forever after that.
How'd you get started singing?
Well, I was on a talent show. I was singing with a group called the Passions, who later changed their name to the Swingin' Hearts.
Okay.
And
was that in the 50s?
That was late 50s that I was singing with them while in high school.
What high school did you go to?
I went to, they changed the name from Blue Island Community High School to Eisenhower.
Okay.
So that's where I graduated from. And these guys were older than me. And, everybody knew everybody in Robbins, and we knew who did what. So they knew I loved to sing, because I was singing in the church, and I knew about their group. I mean, everybody looked up to the older guys who were doo-woppers and all that. So
were they in high school while you were in high school?
Yeah, they were like about 3 or 4 grades ahead.
Okay.
So anyway, they asked me to sing with them.
How did they know about you, just from the church?
Just from, like I said, everybody in the community knew everybody.
Okay.
They knew what everybody did, so they knew I could sing. And so they approached me, and they were friends to my older sister as well. So they approached me about singing with them, and so we started rehearsing, and I kind of liked that. And so we started doing shows here and there in some of the local clubs.
Do you remember any of the clubs you did shows in?
Oh, we were at the Apex Lounge, at Skins Lounge. Some of the local clubs that were in the community.
Oh, in Robbins.
In Robbins. And, maybe a few outside of there in Harvey and Dixamore, maybe.
Did you have any contact with the Dells, because they were from Harvey?
No, I didn't. I didn't know the Dells, but I always loved their music and just, always wanted to meet them. Never knew that at a later time I would.
Okay. So you had originally sung gospel in church?
Yes, I started out, as many artists do, singing in church, because that's where you're raised and that's where you get your chance to expose your talent. And it was always encouraged, So I was singing in the youth choir, the junior choir, every choir that I could get into, because I just loved to sing. And I can tell you that the church was a great place to be, because, that's where I'm rooted and grounded.
And how did you get interested in singing R&B music?
Well, it kind of came to me, just listening to the radio and, just a big on your wish list that's something you wanted to do and something you were interested in. So when the Passions came to me, the group that I was telling you about, when they came to me and asked me to sing, then we started singing the songs that we were listening to on the radio.
What were some of those songs or some of the artists?
Oh, by the Spaniels and the Eldorados and whoever else, Ruth Brown and people like that we would hear.
Were you the lead of the group? Like, it was a female lead, male backup group?
Mm-hmm. I sang mostly leads. I'd sing with the background from time to time, but mostly lead.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so then they changed their name to the Swinging Hearts while you were in the group?
No, that was afterwards.
Okay, so they weren't even called the Swinging Hearts until after you left the group.
Right, after I left the group, that is when, you know, we did a talent show, and we were doing just shows and singing wherever we could. Whenever anybody would ask us, we were just out there singing.
Okay.
And we did this talent show, and we got noticed by a talent scout who happened to be Don Talty. And I guess he had was looking for new talent for his label, and somebody told him about that particular talent show that was going to take place. I believe somebody that worked for a pressing plant that he had met.
And the talent show was in Robbins?
It was in Robbins at a school.
Was it at Eisenhower?
No.
Okay.
Eisenhower is in Blue Island. That was our high school.
Okay.
The grammar schools that we attended was in Robbins.
Okay. So do you remember what year you were doing the talent show?
Oh, I'd say late 50s, maybe 59.
And the show was you with the Passions.
Mm-hmm.
And so he saw, did he want to sign the whole group, or what was the story?
Well, he liked the whole group in the beginning. And then later, they told me that they just wanted a female vocalist. You know, didn't want the group, but just wanted a female vocalist.
Don told you that?
Right.
Okay.
And just wanted a single vocalist and not the group. So
So you ended up being his artist at
right,
that point?
I didn't want to miss my big chance, and my parents were encouraging me to go ahead, although I didn't like leaving the guys behind. It was just...
I'm sure they would understand you couldn't blow an opportunity like that.
I think they did.
So, one thing is, who was Don Talty? Like, he had a record label at the time?
Yes, he told us that he had a record label and that he was looking for artists to be on that label.
Okay.
And it was a new artist. He had some other people at the time, some groups, and...
Was Formal his record label?
Yes, Formal record label.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think he had a group called the Masquerades on his label.
Yes, and the Trinidad.
Yeah.
That was another group.
Okay, and he had some blues artists too.
Mm-hmm.
But was he like a promoter around town with a label?
Yes, he was. He had, like you said, he had other artists like Guitar Red, I believe.
Yeah.
And Phil Upchurch.
Okay.
Was also an artist
and
with a label.
Was he like a white promoter?
Yes, he was.
But he promoted almost exclusively R&B acts at the
right.
time.
Right. He had a great love for jazz and R&B music, and so he promoted. That's what he was looking for his label, because I think it was a going thing at that time. You know, the R&B artists were coming forward.
Okay. So you said he discovered you at that show in the late 50s, early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's the story? How did you actually end up recording, and what was your first record?
Well, I was still in high school, and my parents insisted that I complete high school before embarking on a singing career. And so I graduated high school in 1961, and after that we started looking for material for me, and got introduced to Curtis Mayfield backstage at the Regal Theater.
So were you with Don at the time?
Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
So were you just hanging out at the Regal Theater, or were you actually performing in the talent show?
No, I wasn't performing or anything. I think we went there because Curtis and Jerry Butler and all those people were performing, so that was an opportunity for me to meet Curtis.
So he was looking for songwriters for you?
He was looking for material, and Curtis was writing wonderful songs at that time for the Impressions and for Jerry Butler, so... I guess he spoke with Curtis, and Curtis said that he had material that might fit a female singer. So that's when he took me there to meet Curtis.
Did Curtis make you audition for him, or how did it work?
Well, he had a way about him. You know, he would play something and then say, can you do that? Sing that. You know, play a little bit of something. And, you know, and that was, I guess that was an audition.
Okay.
To see if you really could handle it.
You'd like test out your style.
Right.
Pretty much.
Test out your style. Listen to your range. You know, it wasn't like, okay, la, 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 up the scale or anything like that. It was just sing. Oh, he would sing strum. You know, he was a left-handed guitar player. Beautiful tone, beautiful sound. And I was just enchanted just hearing the music and couldn't believe I was sitting there at the Regal Theater with these people finally looking, auditioning kind of and looking for material for myself to record. It was just an amazing thing.
Okay. So did he say right away that he had tracks for you, or did you go back and talk to him later? What was the story?
Oh, the story... was that, like I said, at the Regal, you know, he strummed a little bit of a tune and to see if, you know, what my voice was like. Then he said, I think I do have some songs that might fit your voice and that you might be interested in. So we made a date to later get together and really listen, you know, and to what he had, and then decide, you know, on what we could do, because they were definitely interested in recording me. But first of all, first things first, you got to find the right song.
Okay.
So later, we met with Curtis, you know, maybe a week or so later.
Where did you meet him?
We went to his house.
Okay. Where was he staying then?
I think he was staying, you know, if my memory serves me.
Okay.
I believe he was staying on the west side.
Okay.
And we went and talked with him, and he played some of his songs. And he played one in particular. He played We Girls. And he said, I want you to hear this to see if what you think. So he played it and sang it, and he had, and I'm going, oh, he can sing it as high as I can, you know. I'm like surprised to hear this, you know. And so he was the kind of person that could make you very comfortable, and it was just a good feeling all the way around. And then he played We Girls, and I'm like, I was in love.
Okay, so that was your song. You picked it out.
I picked We Girls. I said I liked that a lot.
So how long before you ended up recording?
Well, it might have been a month or two before we went into the studio, because we had to perfect it. You know, I rehearsed with him some, a little bit, not a lot. And then we had to get an arranger.
Who was the arranger?
Riley Hampton.
Okay.
Great Chicago arranger.
Yeah, he did a ton of stuff.
Oh, yes, he did. And I just, you know, he was so easy to work with as well. So understanding that you were a new artist, new kid on the block, trying to figure out what am I doing here. So, you know, he was kind of like he was the type of person that explained things to you so you would understand what was going on. And so he said, I'm going to arrange this around you. So he listened to the rehearsal tape and arranged the song, Mama Didn't Lie. I'm sorry, I'm ahead of myself. He arranged We Girls.
Okay, so, and this record got released, was it in 1962?
I believe it was.
And this is your very first record, and it was called We Girls. I'm going to play it, and then we can talk some more.
Okay, that's fine.
So this is Jan Bradley with her very first record, We Girls, which came out on the Formal label in 1962.
Girl, we can't help it. We were born to hypnotize. So be cautious when you look into our darling eyes. Eddie will find out what a girl's love can do. You'll chase and you'll chase her. You'll chase her until she catches you. But we girls can't help it. We'll hypnotize your soul. Brother, if you caught where we go, you must go. Deal we never were.
Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. That was just Jan Bradley with her very first record called We Girls that was released in 1962 on Don Talty's Formal label out of Chicago. And that record actually, it became a hit, didn't it?
Yes, it really got a lot of play. It was a crossover record, meaning that it was played in several markets.
You mean it got pop and R&B play?
It got pop and R&B play, so that was a good thing. It got me the exposure that I needed to keep going.
And it got played not just in Chicago, but in other cities too?
Yes, it did. I believe, you know, the Midwest market mainly, and then probably other markets as well.
Okay. And did you start doing more shows once you had a record out?
Yes. That would be if you would be in more demand if you had a record to back you up. So, you know, I started doing more, kind of spreading out a little bit, Indiana, Michigan, outside of Chicago. So just with the recognition that I got from that record.
And he had released it on his Formal record label. Did he try to place it onto a larger label?
Yes, he did. I remember very distinctly going to New York City, looking for a record deal, going to a major label, especially the one that comes to mind is United Artists. They were not interested in a African-American artist singing about We Girls.
Okay.
We're talking about pre-civil rights movement.
Okay.
Here. So, I don't know if it was the material or what, but I just overheard a conversation. I was sitting in the waiting area listening to Don Talty talk to Art Talmadge about getting me on the label and getting me the exposure, and that was the problem, that I was an African-American girl.
Okay. Even though it was a pop kind of crossover sound.
Didn't matter.
And was that before he put it out, or he put it out and then he took it to New York?
Well, no, that was before.
Okay.
He went there with a dub at that time, they called it.
Which
know,
was like an acetate.
Demo. Okay. Yeah, an acetate demo. And playing it to see if they had an interest in me to try to get me signed with a major label. Didn't work out. So we came back to Chicago. And because, you know, Don Talty and all of the people that worked with him had faith in me that I had a good record, they put it out on his label.
And it was successful, so... It's, or at least locally successful.
That's correct.
So he actually released a couple more records on you, I think, before Mama Didn't Lie. With Mama Didn't Lie, that wasn't the immediate follow-up, was it? Because I think at least based on the record numbers, there was a track called Whole Lot of Soul and I'm Going to Change. Did Mama Didn't Lie, was that come immediately after?
No, Mama Didn't Lie didn't come. And you're correct. There were a few.
Okay.
Those two that you just mentioned.
Okay.
That came out, and we were trying. It was more like testing the market.
You're just kind of putting out records.
What was going to catch on, you know? So it was like an attempt to continue building my career as an artist. So finally, we met. That was when I met Curtis Mayfield.
But you already met him for We Girls, you were saying?
Mm-hmm. That's when I met up with him again.
Okay.
To
So he was like the secret ingredient.
Yeah,
in,
he was.
So he decided to go back with Curtis to try to get another hit. Was it your idea or Don's idea?
It was my idea. I always wanted to use Curtis's material because I loved it. It was, it fit my voice. Lyrically, it was saying what I wanted to say, and so I just loved his material. So I was very anxious to do another song by Curtis.
And so that's how you ended up doing Mama Didn't Lie.
Mm-hmm.
And so do you remember what year that came out? Was it 62 or 63?
I think that came out in 63.
Okay. And it originally came out on Formal Records, like Don put it out, and mm-hmm. then it got picked up by another label. Is that right?
Yes, that happened quite frequently back in that time, where an independent record producer would put things out on their own label with the hopes that it would get play and then catch on and then get picked up by a major label.
Okay.
So again, we're looking to get picked up by a major label.
So, and what label picked it up?
Well, it was Chess.
Okay.
Although, after it started getting play, we did get a call from United Artists again.
They missed the boat.
We didn't go that way. Chess was chosen, so it went on the Chess label.
So it was actually released and getting airplay, and then Chess Records picked it up
That's
after.
That's right. They picked it up after it was out and getting the airplay and getting a lot of attention. People started talking and calling in and looking for who is that, wanting to know, hear it more. So
did you sign a contract with Chess, or what was the story?
I was signed with Don Talty.
Okay.
Then, of course, when you then go on with a major label, then there's an agreement between them.
Okay. So he had the agreement with Chess, and mm-hmm. you had the agreement just with Don.
Exactly.
So he placed the record, and that became your biggest hit, a national hit, right?
Yes, it did.
Do you remember what cities? But initially, on the formal label, it just got play in Chicago, and then mm-hmm. when Chess picked it up, they were able to promote it nationally. Is that right?
It got play on the formal label in the Midwest market,
okay.
I believe. And then it started, catching on, and Chess wanted it. They asked for it, and that's when Don Talty let them have it so that it could be distributed nationally.
Okay, and then they got play all over the U.S.
That's
on Chess
right.
Records.
From Chess Records, they got play everywhere.
Okay, well let me play the record. Such a classic Chicago sound. This is Jan Bradley with "Mama Didn't Lie."
Caught by the wink of an eye. My mama didn't.
Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. That was just Jan Bradley with her biggest hit, Mama Didn't Lie. And even though it's got such a Chicago sound, apparently the record wasn't recorded in Chicago. Is that right?
No, it wasn't. That was recorded down in Missouri. I think it was Kirkwood, Missouri, at a small studio down there.
How did you end up there?
Well, I guess that was Don Talty, looking for, I don't know. I'm trying to remember back now. Remember, this has been a long time ago.
Okay.
But anyway, I guess he knew some of the musicians that played with the Ike and Tina Turner band. And so I guess they were going to be down there, and he was looking to go down there and talk to some of the guys in that band maybe about doing something separately. I believe that was the story. And in the meantime, he said, well, while I'm down there, why don't I just use that studio and record? Because I had been given Mama Didn't Lie. He said, why don't we just go on and record that down there and see how it turns out. So we took a couple of musicians from Chicago, the guy that played guitar for me at that time, Freddie Young, and a piano player, Charles McNair, out of Chicago. So we went down there, and we were just more or less going to do a demo. So we just found some local musicians, and we recorded it.
Okay. So you recorded it in with it. It's interesting because it has a kind of Chicago kind of sound, but you
mm-hmm.
recorded it in Mississippi, you were saying?
In Missouri.
Missouri, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and it was near St. Louis?
It's near St. Louis. I think it was Kirkwood.
Okay. And one thing that's interesting about the record, too, is it sounds like there's backing vocals, but it's actually you on overdub.
Yeah, that's me on overdub singing harmony.
That was unusual for the time because it became, doing overdubs became big in, like, the 70s with, like, Marvin
mm-hmm.
Gaye. And
right.
But back in the 60s, it was almost always there was a group on it.
Yeah, I wanted a group to back me up on that. We really needed it. I felt so we couldn't find anybody. We tried out one of the girls from the iCats.
Okay.
Because they were in the studio at that time, too,
okay.
With Ike and Tina. They were doing some other recording. And so one of the girls was married to one of the band members, and he was over talking to Don Talty, and he was saying, well, we really want to do some background to this. He said, well, let me get my wife. She might could do that.
Okay.
So it didn't work out too well. So I said, well, let me see what I can do with putting a little background to it. I was actually going to do more than one voice over and try to do the background to it. But then I did the one and sang harmony with myself, and they liked that. And they said, we're going with this. We're just going to leave it like it is. And that was a wise thing to do.
Yeah, interesting early example of overdub, too, and it worked out well on that track.
It really did. I heard it when they played it back. I said, I kind of like that. I don't think it needs too much more. So we just left it as it was.
Okay, and that became by far your biggest hit.
It did.
And did you get pop crossover play with that also?
Oh, yes. That went really high on the Billboard chart and all of the record magazines. It went really like up to 6 and 5 and all of that.
And one thing I wanted to ask about is previously you were probably performing in kind of more kind of R&B type clubs. Did you get more kind of crossover clubs
mm-hmm.
and like kind of classier nightclubs after that?
We did of course the regular circuit with the big theaters, across the country, and then to some, especially in college towns, and places like that, we got a lot more
in
work.
In the Midwest, mainly?
In the Midwest, and then we went out west. We went east a lot.
Okay.
And the south, everywhere, So it was a good time.
Did you do any big shows with famous acts also, or was it mainly you on the show?
No, I've done We did do at that time, you know, like I said, when you do the larger theaters, there are always other acts.
Were you,
like Motown acts and...
Were you touring for a lot of the time at that point?
Quite a bit.
And so were you doing music full-time?
Yes, I was. That was my full-time job.
Okay.
To do music and to do what I loved.
And was Don still your manager? Was he traveling with you?
Yes, at times he did. So that I did get a chance to live my dream and do a lot of traveling, some touring to places that I never dreamed I would ever go.
Okay. Like what, just the East Coast? Or like
no, we went to Stockholm, Sweden at one time.
In the 60s?
In the 60s.
Wow.
And so that was...
What was the show in Sweden? It was. Do you remember who was
in
the show?
It was a show. I don't remember who else. There were other acts, but none from that I can remember from the States.
Were you doing Mama Didn't Lie on the
yes,
show?
Yes, I was doing Mama Didn't Lie and We Girls and all of that.
Okay. So I wanted to ask you about some more of the records you did, but it's confusing because you cut for a ton of different labels all around the same time. So it's hard to know which record came next in your career.
Well, after Mama Didn't Lie, I can tell you this. The Chess writers attempted to come up with something, to come up with a follow-up to Mama Didn't Lie, and that was a hard thing to do.
Okay.
But there were some wonderful writers at Chess, and they really attempted. I think the next song that came out written by a Chess writer was... You Gave Me What's Missing, and I believe These Tears might have been on there.
I think that was much... I think I put in the CD in the order that they came out, actually.
Okay, where is...
I think These Tears was the next one, I think.
I believe it was.
Okay.
Okay. Remember, this has been a while
ago. Yeah.
So.
I just think You Gave Me What's Missing was actually the last record that Chess released on you.
Okay.
So These Tears came out, and so they cut a bunch of follow-ups on Chess.
Mm-hmm.
And you said they were all done by Chess writers,
mm-hmm.
but none of them were really successful.
No, and then I believe It's Just Your... I'm Over You and all of that came. Those are songs that I wrote.
Yeah, that's a really nice one, I'm Over You, and The Brush Off, was that the other side?
Yeah, The Brush Off.
Both sides of that are really nice.
Yeah.
So you said you wrote those tracks.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get started with writing?
Oh, well, that's a story. After Mama Didn't Lie and all of that, like I said, Chess writers were trying to come up with... a song to follow up with. And I kept begging for another one of Curtis's songs. But somehow or another, they had a disagreement, Chess and Curtis Mayfield. I think it was over publishing. And,
okay.
And Curtis said no. He wanted to be in control of his publishing. So that Chess decided, well, Jan Bradley cannot do any more of your songs. And that was not a good thing for me. So that's when the search started for, you know, other writers, you know, to write for me. So I was so disenchanted because I wanted that Mama Didn't Lie type hit again. So I just said, well, you know, after putting out You Gave Me What's... Missing.
Well, after the next one was These Tears.
Oh, These Tears. After putting that out and all of that, and it just didn't go as well, I decided I'd try my hand at writing for myself. So, being disenchanted about it and upset that I had lost Curtis and, you know, as a writer, I just resolved to write I'm Over You.
Okay. So was that about losing? Was that being about being over Curtis?
I was trying to get over it, so I guess that was my way of coming to grips with it.
Okay, well, I'll play that record and we can talk a little bit more.
Okay.
So this is Jan Bradley with... Is this the very first record you wrote that was released?
Mm-hmm. That is the very first one that I wrote that was released.
Okay, this is Jan Bradley with I'm Over You.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that was just Jan Bradley with I'm Over You, which was the first record that she wrote for herself on Chess Records. And we were just talking about how that happened because some of the Chess writers had written some of her follow-up records, and they weren't successful, so she wanted to write her own material.
Yeah, that's right, and that was the first one, and that did go up on the national charts, and so it kind of kept me alive.
So was that the record that got, you, pretty much your record didn't get play after Mama Didn't Lie until that one?
That's correct. And they didn't chart.
Okay.
You know, they didn't go on national charts.
But they got some, they all probably got some local play.
Oh, yes, they got play. But, you know, selling is when you're, when you sell is when your records go on the national chart.
And you said, was that actually the first song? I know that was the first released song you wrote. Was that the first time you ever tried writing before?
Oh, no, that wasn't the first time. I would write secretly and not show it to anybody, and because I didn't think it was, you know,
okay,
that good. But out of desperation and missing Curtis and his contribution with writing, I just decided I would show something that I had.
Okay, so did you tell Don about it? You're
mm-hmm.
like, I want to write for myself?
I just showed him the song and said, I wrote a song.
Okay. And that song had girls backing too, but you said that was also just you on overdub?
That was me singing overdub, singing, you know, harmony with myself.
Okay. And one thing I wanted to ask about is you actually had done one other song with Curtis that came out on another record label, and it was Behind Curtains.
Mm-hmm.
And it came out on a label called Night Owl Records. So did that come out before I'm Over You?
Yes, it did. That was when I was still getting Curtis Mayfield songs.
So you were on Chess Records, but you were actually signed with Don Talty. And
right, and he was, you know, I guess, release.
Because he couldn't put it out on Chess because they wouldn't put out Curtis' stuff, so he put it on another label? Is that the story?
I would assume so. I really don't know how that all worked out.
Okay.
But I do know I did record Behind the Curtains.
And that track came out on a record label called Night Owl Records, and there's a backing group on it too, right? That's one of the only records you did that has a backing group.
Mm-hmm.
Who were the backing group on it?
That was The Impressions.
Okay. So you it must have been exciting to have them on your record, though.
Oh, I was very excited.
Okay. And one thing that's interesting is, do you know who ran, where that Night Owl label was based out of?
Have no idea.
And because you actually cut a record, I think, which actually even came out before Behind the Curtains on Night Owl, because it's got a lower number on the record, like a lower catalog number.
Okay.
And it was as Jan and Chuck. It was called What a Weekend and West Coast Living.
Oh, I think that was, again, I had started some writing, and these were just supposed to be like demos, you know, how you would put songs down and not, you know, just so you could look at them, you know, and listen to see if there was potential.
Okay.
And before you would release it into the market, you know, and then from there, from the demo, just, you know, work it into a production.
Okay.
So I later learned that these songs have been
it was released, and you didn't know it was released.
Didn't know.
And that track, that Gene and Chuck track, it's not even like an R&B record. It's almost like a rockabilly kind of sound,
yeah.
Like a rock sound.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting that you cut a record that sounded like that.
Well, as I mentioned, I was writing with hopes also of getting my songs out to other people,
okay.
Other artists.
And you don't remember.
And so I was just writing, whatever would come to me. And then I would do a demo, you know, so that I wouldn't forget what I wrote. That was customary back in that time, you know. And it still is. You know, you make a demo so that you will have all your material down. If you want somebody to listen to it, you can play it and say, you know, would you be interested in this? So it was done with that thought in mind.
So what studio would you go to record all those demos?
Somewhere in Chicago.
Okay.
Most in Chicago.
Okay.
At smaller studios.
And you don't remember who Chuck was, do you?
I think it was a guy out of Gary that was interested in, you know, singing. and he was an artist that was trying to get signed with Don Talty.
Okay. And you wrote another record that got released on that Night Owl record label by a rock group called The Chapter.
Mm-hmm.
It was called Love is the Answer. Do you remember anything about how that happened?
Again.
Okay.
Writing and hoping that other artists would, you know, record some of my material.
Okay, so it was all just kind of Don placing the material and putting it out. And so at the time you were, you know, doing the writing on the side and recording at Chess Records.
Mm-hmm.
Were the most of the Chess Records, were they recorded at the Chess Studios?
Yes, they were.
Okay.
At the old Chess Studio.
And with all the Chess musicians and all.
Yes.
So we just talked about how I'm Over You became kind of your next follow-up hit on Chess, and you had written it.
Mm-hmm.
So the next record that came out, I think, was He'll Wait on Me and Just a Summer Memory.
Mm-hmm.
Did that get any play?
Just a Summer Memory did get play.
Okay.
I think that was the A-side.
Okay.
And so it did get some play.
Okay.
In the Midwest market.
Do you remember what your next sort of bigger record on Chess was? Was it It's Just Your Way? Was that the record?
I believe you're absolutely right. It was It's Just Your Way, another song that I wrote.
Okay. Well, let me play that record and we can talk some more. So this is Jan Bradley. And by this time, do you remember what year this was about? Was it late 60s at this point?
Yes. We're getting into the late 60s.
Okay, so this is Jan Bradley with It's Just Your Way. Was just Jan Bradley with one of her later hits on Chess Records that was called It's Just Your Way. And if you are just tuning in, I have Jan in the studio now talking about her career. So by that point, you had been with Chess Records for, like, it was late 60s, so probably almost 7 years, something like that.
That's right.
Had you ever done any shows or stuff with other chess artists at that point?
Not a lot. No, I didn't.
Were you touring a lot throughout the 60s?
Yes, I did.
And did you ever do any TV shows?
All up and down the East Coast, you know, American Bandstand kind of shows, and in Chicago with Jim Lonsberry and those, and in Cleveland, I think that was a Big Five, if I'm remembering correctly. There were a lot of TV shows.
Okay.
In Baltimore and Boston and all over like that. We always did the local TV shows.
And all your records, were they mainly getting, when they got played, did they get play on both the pop and R&B charts, or did they get more pop play or more R&B play?
I believe they got more R&B play. You know, like we were mentioning, the crossover records like, of course, Mama Didn't Lie, We Girls. The others, I believe, were more R&B flavored and got more play.
Okay.
On those kinds of stations.
Okay. But you had that kind of crossover potential with your voice, and you had that type of sound that could get play on both types of charts. So did you ever, and one thing that I wanted to ask is, did you ever try to get with Motown Records, like, because they had a similar type of goal with some of their artists like Marvin Gaye at the time?
I believe that Don Talty did, and now that you've mentioned it, thinking back, we did go to Motown to try to get signed. But, of course, at that time, they had Mary Wells and the Supremes and a lot of female vocal groups.
Okay.
And so they didn't need another Jan Bradley.
Okay.
So we didn't...
Yeah, I could see how Mary Wells would be their type of...
Exactly. So I didn't get with Motown. But thank goodness Chess wanted a Jan Bradley.
Yeah, and definitely you kept that Chicago sound on all your records, too. If you were with Motown, it would have been a Detroit sound.
Right.
So, Chess Records, I think they released one more record after It's Just Your Way. It was You Gave Me What's Missing and Nights in New York City.
And I think you're right. Your numbers seem to be adding up here.
Okay.
So, I believe they did, and after that... that was with a chess writer, you know, chess writers wrote those songs.
Okay.
And, again, we're after a hit record.
And those came out, I think, around 1970, around that point.
And I believe that was the last of my recording for Chess, or for anyone, for that matter.
Okay, well, you had done, I wanted to ask about a couple other records you did. You had done another record called Back in Circulation, and that came out on a couple labels. Do you remember what, was that in the 60s at some point?
That was in the 60s as well. You know, as we mentioned before, I was writing, doing demos, and trying to, just get my songs with other artists.
Okay.
And trying to create an interest in that. I wanted to be a writer more than... Well, I wanted to be a singer-writer.
Okay.
So...
Were you inspired by Curtis?
He did inspire me, too, because, you know, with lyrics, I always love poetry and all of that, and I wrote poetry a lot. So, when watching Curtis, and, you know, I asked him, how do you come up with this? He said, it just comes out. And, with some writers, you know, you write the melody, you hear the melody in your head, or with, you might hear the lyrics in your head. With Curtis, I think both would come at the same time. It was like that with me. I'd hear the music and the lyrics at the same time.
Did you ever have formal music training? Like, were you able to read music?
I could read pretty good. I had formal music training, you know, when I was very young.
Okay.
I could read some. Wasn't an expert at it, but I could read some.
And a couple records Oh, yeah, one thing, did I ask about who played guitar on It's Just Your Way? I think I forgot to ask that.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's got a nice guitar kind of sound on it, too.
Again, I was searching for Curtis Mayfield sound, so that was Kermit Chandler out of Chicago. Wonderful left-handed guitar player as well from the West Side.
And he played on, like, he was part of the Shepherds, and he played on Donald Jenkins and the Lighters records.
Yeah, he was a wonderful guitar player.
So did you bring him to Chess Records for that, or how did that happen?
Yes. Don Talty met, Kermit, and introduced him to me, and we wanted that sound on that particular song. We wanted that sound, and Kermit brought that flavor. And, you know, like I said, he was a great guitarist.
Okay. And one thing is, you were talking about you wanted to write for other people.
Yes, I did.
And some of your songs did actually get recorded by other people.
Mm-hmm.
We had mentioned that Chapter record, which you said at the time you didn't even know if anyone had recorded it. It was just kind of placed by Don Talty.
Right, and I met that. I think that group was out of Ohio, and I met them, and you know, they liked some of my songs.
And then there were a couple other artists that I have records that you wrote. One was, I think it was a white female singer named Peppy. It was a track called Hypnotized, and it came out on an Ohio record label
mm-hmm.
called Prism.
Yeah, I remember her.
And another also came out on that Prism label, but I think it might have been a Chicago artist. It was an artist named Paulette.
I think she was, yes. I remember her very well. She was a Chicago girl.
Okay. And so do you remember when those records came out, how it got placed on that Ohio label?
Well, I would say, again, you know, trying to, you know, write songs and just letting artists hear them and them wanting to do it. And, I was thinking of another guy that did Sitting in the Park.
What are you thinking, Billy Stewart?
Billy Stewart. I had a song on his album.
Oh, okay.
Called I'm No Romeo.
Oh, that's an awesome record. They never released that as a single, and it's only on the album.
Yes, it is.
That's a great record. I would have brought that if I knew you wrote that song.
Yes, I did.
that's on the album with Sitting in the Park, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a good song that you wrote. Okay, so you actually wrote for Chess, too, in addition to writing for... Because that came out on Chess Records.
That was probably the only one.
Did you write for Mitty Collier at all?
No, I did not.
Okay. How did... For the Chess thing, was that also placed through Don, or was that through...
Yes, it was. It was through Don Talty, who was my manager at the time.
Okay. And And we talked about almost all your records. And we talked about how the last record you cut on Chess was You Gave Me What's Missing and Nights in New York City. But I have one more record by you that I think might have even come out after it was called I Kinda See the Light and Tricks of the Trade. I think it came out after the Chess record, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, it did. That came out after the Chess situation, so... That was an attempt to maybe get back into the market again.
Was that in the early 70s it came out?
That was in the 70s.
And do you remember what the story was? Were you still with Don Talty at the time?
No, I wasn't. I was just on my own at that time. I did not have management.
Why did you...
To get with a record label.
I should have asked this before, talking about the record. Why did you leave Chess Records?
Well... It wasn't by my choice or anything like that. It just seemed like they were not... my career was just kind of going along. And so I was a little disenchanted. So I was interested in just writing and more or less getting out of the business at that time because my career did not go the way I expected.
Just because you wanted to have... more writing for other people, or you wanted to have bigger hits? Like, why didn't it go as expected?
I wanted to have bigger hits and do other things.
Like
movies and TVs,
okay.
Shows and things of that nature.
So so was Don not pushing for that? Or
I believe he was, but, it just didn't happen.
Okay. So when did you break your contract with Don, or did you tell him you didn't want to do work with Chess anymore?
I just you know, just decided that I told him that I was just getting out of the business and interested in pursuing something else. I always figured I knew there were more dimensions to me than just the music aspect. So I wanted to explore those other dimensions.
Okay. Did you get into any of that other stuff, like acting at the time?
No, not acting. I went back to school.
Okay.
And finished my education.
Did you get a graduate degree too?
Yes, I do. I have a master's degree in counseling.
Okay.
So that is what I do now.
So, did you do that? You said you kind of had like a little comeback record though, that I kind of see the light.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a few years after Chess Records?
Yes, it was. A friend of mine out of Nashville said, "Hey, why don't you come and do this?
What was his name?
He really was a person that was trying to get into the record business. I think his name was Bob Hall.
Okay.
Haven't seen him for a long time.
Okay.
But, and we went down there and cut that, and it went, didn't do too much.
Okay. And did you cut only those two songs?
Yes, just those two songs that I remember.
Okay. And, but he just pressed it. It didn't really promote it or anything.
No, they didn't.
And so then,
they were a new label. Just trying to get started, so I did them, I guess, I don't want to say I did them a favor, but I just did it kind of for fun.
Okay, and did you go back to school after that record or before that record?
Oh, I was in school probably by that time.
Okay, and you finished your degree in counseling.
Mm-hmm.
Did you finish in the 70s?
Yeah, late 70s.
Okay. Well, let me play. We've been talking for a while. Let me play another record, and we can talk a little bit more. So I'm going to play the record you did with the Impressions, because it's a really nice cut. This is Jan Bradley with Behind Curtains. Okay, that was just Jan Bradley backed by the Impressions. That track was called Behind Curtains. And if you're just tuning in, I have Jan Bradley in the studio, and we are talking about her career and her records. So that came out sometime while you were on Chess Records, but while they weren't taking Curtis's material anymore. So another thing... one thing is Curtis redid that record with the Five Stair Steps later and actually got some play on it, but you don't remember the Five Stair Steps version that he did?
Not really, no.
Okay, but I think you definitely had the first version of it.
Okay,
and
that's
then
me.
Another song that he redid on some of his artists that I forgot to ask about was he actually redid Mama Didn't Lie, And he redid it with a female group called the Fascinations. Did you know about that at the time?
I heard about it after it was done. Of course, I had the hit.
Okay.
That's what all the trade magazines said. Buy the Jan Bradley version. That's the real hit.
But your version definitely came out first, is that right?
Yes, it did.
And because I think they both came out around the same time, but yours came out first and got the promotion and the
mm-hmm.
play. So, and you did a ton more records, all on Chess and other labels, and you wrote a lot of material. And you said you became a counselor. Have you ever done any music stuff since the 70s?
Well, most of the music stuff that I've done has been in church again. Back to your roots. I sing with my church choir, and I do a lot of lead vocals, and that's what I really enjoy. But so far as I still write, haven't gotten any hits out or anything like that lately, or given my material to anyone. But I still write for my own pleasure.
Okay.
As a hobby. And that's basically what I'm doing now.
And so do you have like a little studio set up too where you can record your stuff? Or
my son does. And, you know, we get together sometime and just put things down and do the old demo thing again.
Well, I hope something that you've written eventually gets
digitally.
I hope you get something recorded because you wrote some nice tracks back in the day.
Thank you. I'd love to do that just for fun.
And you're still a counselor, is that right?
Oh, yes. I still work full-time as a counselor. I work with people who have all kinds of difficulties, and it's my life's work, and it's my passion at this time.
I'm glad you were able to find such a great career helping people.
Yes, I did. I found something very rewarding to do.
And so first of all, thanks so much for coming down and telling your story. I really appreciate it.
Oh, this has been my pleasure. This has been so much fun and meeting you at last. I should tell the audience that and when I first talked to you, I found out that you were such a collector from the music of that era, the 60s and 70s. It's just good to meet someone who has that deep appreciation for that kind of that music, because you know that was just an awesome time for us as artists.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that love your records from back in the day, and it's kind of that Chicago sound from the 60s and 70s. Like it's a kind of lost sound that, you know, a lot of people still appreciate.
Well, I'm certainly happy to hear that.
So, do you have any last words for the listening audience?
I just want to say this has been so much fun, and I've enjoyed it meeting this guy, Bob, and sitting here with him and you know, during the Sitting in the Park show. And I just want to say to people, do what you love.
That's good advice.
Find your passion, and that remember you have more dimensions to yourself than just one.
Definitely very good advice. So, thanks again to Jan for coming up. And there's a ton more records that she did that I could play. This last record that I'm going to play is a track she did that's titled Back in Circulation.